was the date last night?
I like it downtown. It was so nice. It was, my wife and I had not had much time together lately, given the press schedule, so it was wonderful to go out and just have a good time.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you have a place downtown? Or?
No, we used to, but we used to live on Warren Street.
Warren Street.
Just like block below Chambers.
Okay.
We were four blocks away from World Trade Center. We had the top floor, and we had a skylight. We would look up at the World Trade Center, looking directly up, like it was just right next to us.
Hmm.
And we actually were in Los Angeles on the 11th, September 11th, but we lived there for a couple years.
All right.
Beforehand, and we left in 2000.
Yeah.
I love downtown. So, where do you live?
Right now, I am exchanging an apartment with a guy who has my place. So I'm living in North Bergen.
Where's that?
Which is right across the river.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah.
Fast little.
Oh, that's great.
Jaunt.
That's terrific.
You know, it's like being in, you know, roughly the same distance from Brooklyn, like many people are. So
right.
Not that bad.
And is Jet here?
Jet is in Syracuse.
Oh, Syracuse.
And he's coming down, finishing his third year, and he'll be here this coming Saturday.
Oh, great. That's fun.
Yeah.
That's excellent. How's he liking it?
Oh, he's enthused. It's funny. He was going to be he was devoted to being a print person. He's majoring in journalism at Cy Newhouse School.
Right.
And he wanted to be in print, but because he wanted to figure out an area that would be his and not be in my realm.
Sure.
Which, understandable, of course.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
But he's starting to come around to the idea that there ain't going to be no print in a matter of months, if not certainly years. So.
It's crazy.
It's tragic. Tragic.
It is heartbreaking. I don't know. The idea of newspapers on Kindles just kills me.
You know. Have you got a Kindle?
No. Do you?
I'm thinking about buying one someday.
Yeah.
I love the idea of being able to read a book, you know, on a plane.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But I mean, you can read a book on a plane anyway. Like, the idea of having all your newspapers, waking up and having, you know, all of them available, I love that idea, but there's the idea of not having the tangible, tactile, that newspaper.
Right.
It's, I don't know, it's just, it's... It is the saddest notion. It was a great... Did you watch any of the TED Talks? There's a conference called the TED Conference, and I was invited to speak there, and I did, and it was fun. Oh.
Sorry.
Would you like anything to drink while reviewing the menu?
No, I know. I can tell you. Just the two-egg Denny style would be fine.
How would you like them prepared? Scrambled, sunny side up?
Scrambled would be great.
Scrambled with
and,
toast?
With toast and some volcanic ash bacon. In other words, nothing like it. You know, barely
barely
worthy of the name.
Scrambled eggs with crispy bacon. Turkey bacon, crispy.
You want turkey or you want regular?
Regular, please.
Regular. Okay, what kind of
But so cooked, apparently, that it's almost not.
Really, just nothing left of it. And rye toast would be great. Thanks. Yeah, go ahead with the story. I'm sorry.
She hates you.
Because I said the word volcanic ash because I was being alliterative.
No. But the, what were you talking about?
A conference that you were invited to.
Yeah, the TED thing.
So, how do you spell it again?
TED, TED. It's Technology Entertainment Design.
Got it.
But there was a gentleman, I believe from Spain, who did a talk this year about newspapers, and he discussed how his approach to designing the paper was about making every issue not just informationally, the best it could be, but aesthetically different. And he showed some demonstrations, like some examples of what they've done to change the design. It was kind of inspiring. You thought for a second, listening to him speak, that there's a future in print, in newspapers. And
drink anything.
Orange juice would be good.
Orange.
Nice.
She likes you again. There was a weird thing that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now you're her favorite.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I hope print doesn't go away, but I know you're saying.
Newspaper is going to be kind of a boutique thing, I guess, which is great. As long as there's some remnant of it is all I care about. I want to have a newspaper when I sit down twice a year, which is the only time I actually pick up a newspaper, so I can have that wonderful sentimental comfort of reading a newspaper.
Yeah, yeah.
But the truth is, most of the time I just do this.
Yeah, of course, sure.
So,
how are you liking your iPhone?
Oh, it's okay, except I gotta go up to 16 gig and not 8. It's just starting to, I'm adding apps and things, and it's kind of getting the memories of a problem.
Yep.
You got one?
No. I have a iPod Touch, but I use the BlackBerry.
I got absolutely raped last year in Europe. Because I went on a data plan that I paid a flat rate on, and I exceeded that immediately. And I came back, I owed $2,600
on
data alone.
That's just crazy.
Sickening.
Yeah, but, that's but bad. That's, you gotta be so careful about traveling to those things.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So can I ask something about Gail Berman?
Sure.
Because she's in the New York Times 2 days ago. And what she said
about Wonderwall.
Wonderwall.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't a quote from her, but it was a saying that she was the godfather at Paramount of the going back to the to the basics idea. And my understanding from a friend who is a big Trek person who tells me that basically she took credit for it, but it was not her idea. That if anybody was the one urging it on, it would be Brad Weston more than she. And that by the time it was actually engaged with Bad Robot, she was gone, so she really wasn't any kind of,
I don't know the details of what happened inside the offices of Paramount, but I know that Gail Berman was the one who came to me and asked if I would be interested in doing a new version of Star Trek. And my immediate reaction was that it was an exciting challenge to do a version of Trek that would appeal to me because it never did. The second knee-jerk reaction I had was Kirk and Spock. Because though I hadn't seen the various iterations, I knew there had been a bunch of different versions of Star Trek. Is that remotely cooked enough for you, Ed Bacon?
All right.
It's not quite volcanic, but it's good. All right. The point is, I knew there had been so many different versions of Star Trek that instead of creating yet another ship with another cast of characters, go back to the thing that I never found my way into anyway.
Right.
Go back to Kirk and Spock. So my reaction to Gail was, if I'm going to do it, I'd want to do the version, back to Kirk and Spock. And she was completely open to that. I thought that would be fun. And I immediately called Bob and Alex, the writers, and I called Damon Lindelof and Brian Burke and said, you guys interested in doing this? And Bob and Alex, it turned out, had also, I think with Mark Evans, discussed the idea of doing Star Trek. So it ended up working out really well. We all got together. Brian Burke had never seen an episode, ever. Knew nothing about it. Roberto Orsi, an insane Trek fan. Alex and Damon liked it as well, and I was indifferent. And so we had this sort of range of attitudes and experiences with Trek. And that was how it started. So I'm not sure whether the initial, Brad Weston was intimately involved in the development of it, and he was been an amazing support. I can't say enough good things about Weston, but Gail was involved for sure.
Okay. Yeah. So it would be fair then for her to say that she used the term reboot. That's more your term. She actually used the term "let's reboot it and start fresh."
No, she what she said was that they were interested in basically doing another version of Star Trek. It was clear in conversation they didn't want Star Trek 11.
Mm-hmm.
But what it meant specifically, they didn't have an approach. They just felt like this was a valuable opportunity.
So the two things that stand out, unquestionably, is sense of pacing and tightness, and it doesn't ever lag, but you don't feel like you're tearing through it either, which I really
Oh, thank you.
And the reason you don't feel you're tearing through it is because, at least for me, not really hardcore TV series fan.
Right.
Certainly aware of it, and I've watched my share of, and I like the pretty girls that come on every week,
How can you not?
Which I understand Roddenberry had his sampling of when he was there back in the day.
There are rumors.
Anyway, because there's that intellectual fervor that I associate, however accurately, but I remember that was actually more intellectually, agile? Would that be the term? But it was an engaging thing
it was.
From a cerebral standpoint.
Yeah.
And you have gotten into that, and that's what's really nice about it.
Well, thank you. I mean, the idea was, for me, that when I read the script, after developing it with Alex Bob and Damon and Brian for quite a while, when I just read it, I was just struck by the fun of it, and I love the dynamic with the characters, the optimism of the world. I thought was refreshing. I loved the opportunity for visual spectacle, but the most important thing was the characters were relatable, you know, fucked up characters. Mm. And I loved it. Like when you meet Kirk, he's this schmuck. He's this, like, you know, punky, you know, idiot in a bar. What's up?
I'm sorry, I forgot to ask for just plain black coffee. May I also have that? Sorry, schmuck in a bar.
She hates you again now.
Right.
Weird. No, but I thought that that was really, that grabbed me. The idea that this guy was just, though he had a lot of potential, he was this, you know, aimless, mm-hmm. lost, you know, soul. And I love the idea that Spock, I'm not sure if I knew this or had forgotten it, but the idea that, I always thought Spock was just that kind of almost computer-like, logical mm-hmm. being, but the idea that he was half-human, and the idea that that being logical is a choice that they make, that it's not this sort of biological imperative, the idea that that guy would have to choose logic, forego his humanity, the half-breed idea was fascinating to me. So you had these two messed up, you know, characters that provided a way in for me that I never had. And that combined with a couple sort of classic drawing room scenes, which I loved, you know, in the script and know was something that they did a lot of in the series, mostly because it was cheap to film the drawing room, the strategizing and debating sort of philosophical approaches to dilemmas. That was a fun component. Having said all that, my goal was to make a movie that was, you know, that felt as real and tangible as possible, and yet was like a roller coaster ride. It just felt like the ride at the amusement park you have to go on. You know what I mean? And that was really like, but I just wanted it to be that. Yes, I wanted to please the Star Trek fans. Yeah, I knew it was important and all, but it was more important than anything to me was just that the movie feel like, you know, you believe it, and that the ride was a blast. That was the goal.
The principle also seems to have been that it's better when you have a meal to be a tiny bit hungry as you're walking away from the table and wanting more, rather than completely, nice. All right, I've had enough of that, which obviously some movies do. I felt a little bit hungry, which is a good thing.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you for that, too. I have to say, part of that, I think, beyond just, you know, the actors, I think, did a great job, the sound design was really critical. And I think a lot of movies that I've seen in the past, you know, 10 years, they're so overwhelming, not just visually but orally, that like by the time you're done you can't hear because you've just been blasted. And one of the gifts we had in this movie that in post-production was the ability to go back, and we did two mixes after the final mix. We went back and basically had three mixes. We did a mix, it was done, it was no way good enough. It clearly wasn't right. And we went back and changed almost everything. I realized my favorite movies, my favorite, you know, the movies that have amazing mixes, and you can list, you know, any of them. Mm-hmm. At the time, they might have had anywhere from 16, maybe 24 tracks, you know, maybe. Now you get 196 tracks with a computer off the shelf. You don't even have to, and it doesn't make it better. It just makes it more and louder and to me, actually. So what we learned was an obvious lesson, but you keep relearning obvious lessons, you know. Mm-hmm. Was to just bring it all down. Ben Burtt came in to help out. We had a great sound designer, Mark Steckinger, but Ben Burtt came in, and he just said, "Bring it down. Don't do so much." And we actually ended up removing 16 minutes of music, and we ended up minimizing and actually embracing recreations of some of the original Star Trek sounds, and all of a sudden that was better. And the end of the movie, for example, it's a huge, you know, a lot of sort of big, it could have been this big bombastic, crazy, over the top, and we ended up literally taking moments and almost removing sound completely and having just music play, so that you didn't feel exhausted and ear fatigued. But then we went too far in that direction, where it just felt almost too minimal. So the final mix we did, it was this crazy thing. We ended up putting back probably 10 minutes of music and finding this balance between the two, and I think we finally hit it. But I think part of it is, at the end, you don't feel battered quite the way, you know, you would have in our first mix, which I think, to me, didn't leave you wanting more, but left you, you know, exhausted and a little beaten.
That's really interesting. I guess what you're telling me is that I'm not really aware. Perhaps I might be feeling battered from time to time by mixes, by sound, by...
It's amazing. I mean, you know, it's a weird thing, too, because we were doing the final mix. There's one part where the bad guy's ship is getting destroyed, and we're doing the mix, and when you're working on a mix, there's the sound effects mixer, there's the music, you know, mixer, there's the dialogue mixer, and so there'll be times where they'll run through a section of a reel with only music playing, mm-hmm. or with only sound effects playing.
Right.
And that's what was happening. We were doing it, and all of a sudden they ran through this one section, and there was just music. And I was like, guys, look at that. You know, that is so much more effective than having all the literal sound effects.
Right.
So it was like, it was almost an accident in that case where we sort of stumbled upon, and it eliminated that sense of being, you know, overburdened and again, you know, slammed by sound. And then what it does is it just modulates that section, so it makes the next beat, when the sound comes back in, something you're hungry for,
right.
as opposed to something that you're sick of, you know? Anyway, whatever. Again, it's obvious, but to experience it and realize you don't want to, you know, keep it at 11 the whole time is a nice thing to be reminded of.
My thought about this, about the track thing being genuinely rebooted, and this, the analogy I had in my head was it's like the way Casino Royale rebooted the 007.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, you feel that there's a fresh deck of cards here, and it feels...
For sure, exactly right. Now, yeah, I mean, obviously with the new cast, the tightrope we had to walk was Leonard Nimoy's in this movie. It acknowledges and embraces that it's a continuum. But at the same time, I had no interest in doing Star Trek XI, so it was that weird thing of having to please fans in you know, include literally, you know, the iconic actor, or one of the two iconic actors from the original series, and yet have this be its own brand new thing. So it was a strange one, but a fun challenge.
What was the name of your ice planet of Hoth?
Delta Vega.
Okay. Right.
Well, by the way, though, I mean, quite frankly, you know, looking at the Star Wars movies, they've pretty much covered every weather system. Whether it's desert or snow or anything in between, like, I don't know what you could possibly do that hasn't been done.
Right.
They've done rainforest, they've done, you know, rocky, they've done everything.
Right.
They've done asteroid.
Ecotopia, Northern California.
Yeah, yeah. I defy anyone to tell me the weather system that George Lucas has not copywritten, you know? So, yeah, we were screwed no matter what. But Hoth is definitely, come on, how great when, I remember when, you know, Empire Strikes Back came out. And they were in the snow, and I just thought that is the coolest thing. Just that they were in the snow at all, I just remember thinking that was my, like, oh my god, just cracked my head open. It was so good.
You know what I couldn't tell from the 30 minutes or 25 minutes of footage, as far as Pine is concerned?
Yeah.
What you get from the film is that is a reminder of something we've known since we were kids, which is that all good leaders have genuine intestinal fortitude. And if you don't have that key thing, then you're certainly not going to. I don't care how brilliant, how strategic your thought is. If you don't have that, and that's what you see in the film.
It's so
that's
great.
When I came, I said, okay, this is good.
Well,
I buy this.
When Chris Pine came in, he was the last guy we cast. We've been looking around, and he came in, and we thought, okay, he's another good-looking actor. We've seen a lot of those. And we started reading. Mm-hmm. And he had this, it was interesting because he's very smart, he went to Berkeley, he's a smart guy, but he had this raw quality, this kind of like, this sort of like brash, cocky thing, but he was still vulnerable, and what I realized was, he's really funny, like genuinely funny, and I think the thing I lucked out more than anything on this whole cast, Zachary, Chris, Zoe, clearly Simon and John Cho. Surprisingly, like shockingly, Carl Urban, they're all funny people. Like, I know we weren't making a comedy, but it was clear that Trek, which has been parodied so many times, it needed to be funny intrinsically, like from the inside out. It couldn't be, you know, a parody. But Chris had that quality where it was like he was willing to make a fool of himself. He could give a shit. He wasn't one of those actors that, like, needed to look super cool. It was like, if he looked like an asshole, he was fine with it if it served the story. Like, and I just realized this was, like, he was a fine because that was what Shatner had. I didn't want anyone doing an impersonation. Mm. But Shatner is funny. He's got a great sense of humor. And that was the thing that I realized. Good looks are key. And, you know, obviously acting skill is critical. But I knew if Kirk wasn't funny inside out, it would be stiff and crappy.
So someone told me that he has confided to someone that one of his heroes or paradigms as far as what is Paul Newman. He really loves
the movies. He never told me that. Hmm. That's interesting. Well, so I mean,
just one guy passing along.
You can't deny anyone's embracing Paul Newman. It's like, yeah. Oh my God. Hmm. I remember.
Had he done, by the way, the wine movie when you met him?
Yes. Bottle Shock. Yes, he had done that. I'd not seen it, but.
Because that was a terrible hippie wig they made him wear, you know? It just looked like a hippie.
Yeah, I still have not seen that movie, I must admit, I have to say. But he's, I mean, you know, he's a. You should talk to him. He's a wonderful guy. Mm-hmm. That really. And his dad is so funny. We were in. We were in Dubai. His father was Robert Pine. He was on Chips, okay. An actor, and we were in Dubai, and we had Brian Burke, my producing partner, and I. And we were in a taxi,
gentlemen.
Excellent, thank you so much. And we were in a taxi, and we asked this driver. We said, you know, so what Hollywood films do you like? And the first thing he said is Chips. Really? He's like Eric Estrada, Larry Wilcox. I said, oh, wow. And then we said, well, we're working with the son of the guy who was, like, their boss. And he's like, Robert Pine. Like, we're in the middle of Dubai, like, riding in the desert. And this, the one thing this guy mentioned, so I told Chris, he was very flattered.
So there, again, in key with what I was talking about, it doesn't feel too long at all. In fact, you could even go with another 10 minutes, which is perfect.
Oh, that's great.
So there must, and there, I presume we will see a somewhat longer.
Well, there are some scenes we ended up cutting. There's this whole sequence that I did with Eric Bana's character, the bad guy Nero, in prison. Right. And it was a really beautifully designed sequence. The production designer did an amazing job. The costume designer, Michael Kaplan, it's the weirdest thing. Do you know him at all? Have you worked with him? He's unbelievable. He's one of these. I'd never worked with him before. Every time he would show me something, it felt right. And I swear to God, it was that weird thing where I'm usually full of opinions. You know, certainly not always right by any stretch, but full of opinions. And it was the strangest thing. I'd go into his studio and I'd look at what he was working on, and with so few exceptions he would show me something and I'd say, you know, yeah, that's it. But it was unnerving because I literally felt like I had no opinion. I felt like I had no compass. He was so spot on with the wardrobe, and he designed for the sequence that was cut this amazing design for these characters that are Klingons. And by the way, working on a Star Trek movie is lunacy, because you're so inside of it and focused on it, and then every once in a while you see it from the outside in and you think, what the hell am I doing? Because you're talking about Klingons and Romulans and Starfleet and Vulcans, and it's so, you take it very seriously, and there were moments where I had to psych myself back into the moment and think, this must be what Peter Jackson experienced. This must be what George Lucas, I mean, I had to force myself not to. And one day, you ever watch Extras? The show Extras? Have you ever seen it? It's Ricky Gervais, it's a cable show about people who are extras on Hollywood movies.
I'm really pretty weak on a lot of television.
It's all right, and it's a fun, very funny show. Mm-hmm. Ashley Jensen is a woman, Scottish actress, who's on that show. And one day she came, she visited our first AD, and because that show is about mm-hmm. often ridiculous Hollywood films, and these two English actors who are extras in them, mm-hmm. Of course, I just felt like I was, you know, fodder for, you know, just mockery and anyway, mm-hmm. whatever. And I had to, like, again, remind myself to focus on the movie. But in any event, this sequence that was cut was this very cool sequence with these amazingly designed costumes and some great makeup effects. And not that that's obviously no reason to keep it in the movie, and I didn't. But there are a few sequences. There's Spock's birth. There's a whole thing with young Kirk. And his brother and their uncle that I cut. In fact, the boy he drives past, who's now named Johnny as he drives past, was originally George, his older brother. And there's a whole story there that was cut. So there's a scene between Winona Ryder and Ben Cross that was cut from later. So there are a bunch of scenes that we ended up losing because, obviously, what's best for the movie is best for the movie.
But we'll probably...
Yeah, they'll be on the DVD for sure. Yeah.
Do you have another cut for the DVD, or are you just going to go with
theatrical? I think just the theatrical and deleted scenes, but Paramount's talking about doing an extended version, which I'm not quite sure how I feel.
Another glass of orange juice. Are you done with that?
Thank you very much. It'll probably just be the deleted scenes, I think. I don't know. Hmm. What do you prefer, deleted scenes, or do you prefer like a version of the movie? What is your preference?
Every now and then, a film works more interestingly longer, like Cameron's Aliens, the longer version of that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was wonderful. It was better than the theatrical.
I love that scene where they're sitting in front of that like garden, you know, in the beginning before she goes.
Yeah.
It's so cool. I love that idea.
And what else? The longer Bugsy is better.
Oh, really?
And the Cameron Crowe's Almost Famous is definitely better, without question.
Really?
On the what do you call it, the bootleg version.
That's interesting.
So that happens every now and then.
I love Cameron. Oh, he's a great.
You guys are...
Mm-hmm. I love him.
Call each other up, know each other.
Yeah. He just took his kids to see the movie. on Saturday, I had a little screening for my kids mm-hmm. and their friends. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. His sons are awesome.
So what's going on with the Hawaii movie? The thing, you know.
I don't know. It was going to happen. Now it's not. I'm not sure. I mean, I've been so busy with all this Trek stuff that all I know is that he and I are going to get together and talk when I get back and when he's free, because I want to catch up on all that stuff. Because last time we were hanging out, I was really looking forward to that. That movie was going to happen. So I'm not sure.
What do you have you been asked to apply your intelligence to two more of these things, or how many have you said you'll at least consider being involved in? And do you see yourself as directing also, or
contractually? You know, I'm attached as a producer on any sequel, but mm-hmm. we literally not had one meeting about sequels. I mean, the writers, producer, none of us. The studio, there's a deal in place for the writers and obviously the actors,
mm-hmm.
but there's no. I mean, we literally, like, in sort of offhand remarks, kind of throwing out, like, oh, that could be cool.
Mm-hmm.
But we've literally never sat down. There's no outline. There's no story, script, anything. So, I mean, I don't want to be presumptuous, and I certainly don't want to jinx anything. And I feel like, you know, if people like it and there's a demand for another one, we would be thrilled, obviously, to do it.
Sure.
And as a director, I'm open to it, but we don't have a story yet, so it's hard to, like...
I think I understand, and I certainly respect the phase that you're in right now, and the ambitious projects that you've done so far, and you probably will be doing for several years. Do you ever see yourself making some film that's kind of austere and a lot simpler?
I would love it.
Do you
have
ideas along
those? Are you a fan of Gran Torino?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of that film. I was surprised how much I like it.
I just saw it. I hadn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
That movie just inspired me to just stop all the craziness. It was so beautiful. It was so funny. It was so, it reminded me, it's just the deliberate quality of it and the kind of the thoughtfulness of it and the pace of it, those elliptical scenes and that the and like the unabashed sort of, you know, oh God, the sort of the primary colors of it, I just thought were spectacular. I loved that. I don't mean like there wasn't amazing subtlety and great, but like it was just, it was so beautifully done. I mean, obviously no one is more watchable than that guy. Like, you know, he's just crazy great. But that movie was, it reminded me in a way that for some, oh, thank you.
Would you like me to clear your lunch plate?
Sure, thank you. You know what? I'm going to take a couple bites. It reminded me just how great, good, straightforward, simple storytelling is. And it made me hungry for that.
I watched it on a disc that I was given a screener.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it with a friend, Philip Noyce, who's doing the Angelina Jolie movie.
Oh, how's it going?
They're about 2 weeks away from finishing. 2-3 weeks.
The same production designer did Trek.
Huh.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, his comment about 20 minutes into it was, you know, nobody shoots and cuts the film together like he does anymore because it's really about 25, 30 years ago when that kind
wasn't
of thing
it great?
Was the norm. It's wonderful.
Oh, it was so good. I felt that exact same thing. It was like, it reminded me of, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a movie that had that same cadence. It had almost like a 70s rhythm.
Yeah.
Which, loved it. Loved it. So the answer is yeah, you know.
So you do foresee some sort of lower key thing?
I would love it. I mean,
because you must have ideas that come to you all the time in different ways.
I do, and a lot of times I feel like, you know, they're not worthy, they're not interesting enough, and... And there is that dangerous sort of temptation to only be attracted to the ideas that feel economically viable, which is, I think, a potential disaster if that's what you know. And so I think you just have to go with your gut, with what is compelling to you. And the truth is, I've been very lucky to not, you know, in recent years, have to work on anything that I was doing because I felt it was a way to, you know, make a living. I've been able to work on things that I actually genuinely cared about and hoped would be profitable.
Well, that's what the stuff works, because you obviously care about it.
Well, that was... Well, thank you. That's really the... You know, that's been my goal, at least.
Yeah. I'm going to get kicked out of here by your assistant any second now. I can feel her hovering wherever she is. But, may I take a shot of you?
Yeah, of course.
Sitting here?
Let me just get this plate out of here.
Okay.
So I don't look like the pig that I am. Let me just get rid of my plate.
Okay.
Wait a minute. You took a picture of the plate.
This is actually kind of cool with the salmon and the bagel.
But I don't want to have the food pictures.
It's just the lighting. It's really exquisite here. I mean, for natural light.
I'm happy to do it here. I just would love to do it.
Let me try and get the tree. Sorry. That's exceptional. Okay. One more time. One time for what? Okay.
You good? So how's your Mac doing?
So why were you in... Huh?
How's your Mac doing?
Oh, the brand new iMac.
Yeah. Is it working?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
You know, it's funny. I know that it's... And I totally don't argue that it's much more, you know, it's just more user-friendly, more naturally interactive. You can, but there are certain window commands I'm just used to, because I've been a XP.
Like,
I love XP.
Like, what window commands do you miss?
Like, my very easy right-click on an image, just put it on the desktop.
Oh, I see.
With the Mac, you can actually take it and just
drag it over. Yeah.
And there's also a secondary thing.
Right.
So I'm just used to certain things.
Yeah. Right. The Mac is a better interface with it.
I gotta get a 15-inch too one of these days. To, you know.
That is a really, I love that, my 15-inch computer. I used to have that 12-inch one, that small one.
Mm-hmm.
But they stopped making them. I love that small, the 12-inch one. I actually. I know they're supposed to be working on a netbook, like a small, which would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Have you tried the Air?
No.
The Air's great. I mean, if you just want it for writing.
No DVDs, no CDs.
You can get there's a little external thing if you need to plug it in.
Right.
But if you're going to do it for like going to coffee shops, where I love to do, I just go to coffee shops and I write.
Right.
The Air is spectacular. It's because it weighs so little.
Yeah.
I've got one upstairs. It weighs so little, and it's, again, I wouldn't say if you're doing graphics extensive stuff or music work, I wouldn't say use that, but mm-hmm. it's really, I love it.
Yeah. And
And it's cheaper than the 15 inch for sure. And I think it's the same size screen.
It's about 1200 or something?
Something like that. I mean, it's like, I just can't believe how little it weighs. I mean, it's sort of amazing. You know? I packed that in my bag for my wife, and I had in my backpack, I had the 15 inch and the Air, and it didn't feel like you were carrying two computers around.
Now, I missed why you were in Dubai. You were there to...
Oh, we went to Kuwait to show the movie to the troops.
Okay.
So we went there. It was amazing.
How did that go? I didn't hear that story.
Unbelievable. Yeah. We were going on this tour, and Katie, my wife, said, you know, if you're going on this world tour, you know, why don't you do something that's important, you know, more important than just showing the movie, you know, to sell the movie. And I thought, all right. So she brought the idea of showing the troops the movie. So I said to Paramount, we'd love to go to Kuwait. And there was a moment where they were kind of like, what? And then they said, great. Mm-hmm. And then... We did, and it was incredible. We landed, went to Dubai, then flew to Kuwait. We landed in the airport.
Why can't you fly to Kuwait directly?
I guess you could have, but we were in Sydney. So we went Sydney, Dubai, Dubai, Kuwait. And we got to Kuwait, which, you know, just landing in the Kuwait airport was the whole thing, because you look out and you see, I even have pictures of it, you see there was like one of those, you know, oil fires out in the middle of the desert, and everyone's sort of looking at each other like, what is that? And we landed in the airport. There was a bus. We got taken to the base in a bus where we had to have the drapes closed in the bus. You're driving through, you know, peeking out the drapes, just desert as far as you can see. We got to the base. There are like 10,000 troops there, all branches of the military, including Coast Guard. And we got to meet these people and, you know, see the base, the command center. We got to, you know, they had us sign some autographs, but it was really about just getting to meet these people. And it's an amazing thing because intellectually you know that they're there, of course. And suddenly you're hanging out with them, you're having lunch with them, you're talking to them, and you're seeing the faces of these people who have not seen their families for months, if not years, who are out there doing the job that you know they're doing, but when you actually see them, the respect that we all, you know, have for them is no longer theoretical,
right.
You know, and I gotta say, you know, it was as much fun as we've been told and seen that they had. This was, for us, you know, such an eye-opening experience.
Is Kuwait where Baghdad troops go for R&R, or what?
Well,
they
go from Kuwait, they go to Baghdad. It's basically the Kuwaiti government basically funds this base for us to be there, but it ends up being a stop before Baghdad for many troops, and it was an amazing thing. I gotta tell you, it was just a
What's your opinion screen. About Hurt Locker? Have you had a chance to see that?
I can't wait to see it. No, I haven't seen it. You love it, huh?
Oh, it's just the most wonderful procedural.
I cannot wait.
All procedure, and yet you start to realize, of course, it's not just procedure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I heard she did an amazing job. I can't wait to see it.
I thought they might have.
No. I'd love to see it. They may have. Honestly, I've been in such a stupid, myopic tunnel, so yeah. I'm looking forward to coming out.
What do you do to be healthy, other than the natural nurturing effect of your family? What do you do to...
Just like literally
you
physically?
You must be like me. You must be a real 24/7 workaholic.
Yeah. It's funny, because I'm always on your site. I always see the stuff that you post, and when you post it, I think, you know, yeah, you have the same schedule I do.
Do you run or treadmill or do anything?
Yeah,
healthy?
We have treadmill at home, and I mean, honestly, like you said, you know, having kids that age, there's a lot of running around no matter what you want to do. But treadmill and weights and stuff, and never as much as I should, but you know, whenever I do it, I feel like you know, I feel like I'm ahead of it a little bit, but I went skiing, you know, this last winter, and it's never been so clear to me that I'm massively out of shape. It was one, you know what I mean? After one day, it was like, my legs! I felt like, this is not how it used to be, you know? It's so I have to get into better shape.
It's constantly a tension between knowing that I've got to get my regular walking in and get my free weights, but I'm always being drawn to the work to the point that I can't seem to.
I know.
It's like a.
I know. I know.
And it's.
Do you ever watch movies when you're working out? Like, because I started doing that with my
white
iPod
noise
thing.
Is always on in the background.
Yeah, but like, to actually like watch movies. There are so many movies I've not seen, you know, and so to actually watch a film. It's funny, I was just watching Rafifi, which I'd never seen.
Oh, really?
That's and oh, it's great. And it's so funny because that entire sequence where it's just silence, basically, of the actual break-in, where there's almost no, there's no music and almost no noise. But like, it was ruined by like the sound of like all the gym sound. It was like, and I was watching it, was like, I should not be watching this movie right now. It was destroying the whole thing. let's see.
Ed Begley Jr.
Is he? Really?
Yeah. He's very, very funny in the Woody Allen film.
Oh, is it good? I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's really
funny. Oh, I want to see that. But that's the one with Larry David, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You gotta see that.
It's not a crimes and misdemeanors. It's not a match point. It's not on that level. It's like the next level down, but it's still fun.
Crimes and Misdemeanors is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that movie's amazing. That's an amazing movie. Were you a Hannah and her sisters fan? Were you a Hannah and her sisters fan?
That's one of the absolute huge ones of the 80s, without question.
Well, did you like it?
Yeah, I liked it as much as Husbands and Wives. I
love that movie, too. Me too. It's an amazing thing that he did those two movies. That, you know, one is so completely optimistic and romantic, and one is just tragic. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. He's amazing. Mm-hmm. He's someone I'd love to meet.
Endings don't have to be up or down. They just have to be just. There has to be a sense of justice. That we're not getting shovel fed some horseshit. This is the way things are. I think that's then it's not a down ending.
True.
Then it's like,
no, that's true.
You know.
But that's a heartbreaking movie, though.
Yeah.
Husbands and Wives. I'm going to run to go do this phoner that I'm now late for.
We had a little longer than I anticipated.
I got to tell you, let me just say how much I love your site and what a thrill it is to actually meet you in person. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you for talking to me. And
please.
Thank you for Jack Nicholson. I never talked.
It was my play. Literally, when I saw that picture, I just thought, because I actually had never done that before. I'd never.
You physically did it yourself?
I did. And it was like a joy to do it. I was like, because I love when there's a picture and there's something that, you know, and going through and touching it up was just
so
fun.
You really know your
Photoshop. I'm obsessed with Photoshop. And After Effects.
So the effects, what you did is you blew it the hell up.
I blew it up as big as I could.
So you took a little tiny paintbrush and just started
going through and dabbing and replacing things. And
it is just,
it's one of those things.
The greatest thing that nobody I had never shook hands with did for me in my life.
Oh,
so I gotta
but you know, like, it's a funny thing when there's a musician or an actor or director or whatever, and you're so affected over time by their work, and there's something, anything, it's like, I had never talked to you, but I felt like I knew you because of your site. So it was one of those things where I was like, I was giving back to you just because the work that you've done has been so great. So
that's the curious thing about the internet. People don't really know each other, but they do know each
other. It's crazy.
In a very intimate way.
It's the weirdest thing, isn't it? Anyway, I was happy that you liked it. So.
Yeah.
What a pleasure to meet you, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be in touch.